This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August the 16th, 2012, episode 468. Good morning, Horse World. Well, Horses in the Morning, as you know, is now live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summertime. Today, we'll bring you a highlight show from the Horse Radio Network to enjoy. If you caught this one already, please feel free to join us again live tomorrow morning on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And, of course, you can catch all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com or subscribe on iTunes by searching for Horses in the Morning. Well, also tomorrow is Really Bad Ads Day. Jamie and I will be back doing our Really Bad Ads segment, the most popular segment we do every week on Fridays, where we read some really bad ads from Craigslist from around the country. You can submit your really bad ads. Just hop on Craigslist. It takes literally 5 minutes to find really bad ads about horses or anything to do with the farm. Tractors and chickens and goats and whatever. Just send them to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And we have an exciting prize for you this week. Actually, three of them. We will have three winners this week of Dr. Rose's Remedies, a $50 gift pack of Dr. Rose's Skin Treatment Salve and Dr. Rose's Skin Treatment Spray. Dr. Rose's Skin Treatment is an all-natural product that is anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antifungal, antiseptic, and anti-scarring. And this is the one we use here for Beaker, for our horse here at the studios in Ocala. We also use it for our dog, Glory. If any times there's a scrape or anything to do with the skin condition, we get out our Dr. Rose's. This, we've been using this for years. We highly recommend this stuff. You can find out more about it at drrosesremedies.com. But we are giving away, they are giving away three $50 gift packs to the three top really bad ads this week on Friday. So get your ads in to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. Well, we have for you today a show that came out yesterday, the Eventing Radio Show, episode 209. Samantha and John, the co-host of that show, had on Boyd Martin, who was back in the States, to find out how he felt about his showing at London, which was not the best, and he talks about that. Doug Payne also comes on to explain syndication. Doug's always a terrific guest. And Lainey Ashker is their short format guest, talking about how to get the most out of a dressage clinic. It was a terrific show. Well done. Those two have really started to gel over there on the Eventing Radio Show and are doing a terrific job with it. So take a listen to Eventing Radio Show episode 209, and Jamie, Jennifer, and I will see you back here live tomorrow morning. Don't forget to get your really bad ads in today. They have to be in today. Have fun.
This is episode 209 of the Eventing Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network for the week of 16th of August, the Getting Back to Normal edition. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Bit of Britain, at bitofbritain.com, fulfilling the needs of eventers for over 25 years.
Welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. I'm Samantha Clark in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm the remains of John Kyle in London, England.
Welcome back, John. I'm so happy that you survived the Olympic Games. How are you?
Still slightly drained, I have to say. I went to a quiet little show jumping show on Saturday as well, which was just nice to be doing the same job, but at just a very different level. But it was an amazing, amazing fortnight. Across the board, I think anyone who watched any sport, I was lucky enough to go to tennis one day. But for a Londoner, I sat on the mound at Wimbledon midway through the first week of the games, and I just sort of turned to Pippa and went, "I'm really pleased it's going well. I was lucky enough to go to the opening ceremony from Greenwich. We got in and out, no transport problems. We were put up about an hour and a half away from the site. It didn't take any longer any day, even when athletics with 70,000 extra spectators kicked in the second week to get to Greenwich. As I tweeted at one stage, if one of the legacies of the Games is a generation that can really, really efficiently use airport security, it'll make the rest of my life so much nicer going to all those dressage shows in the winter with Just Carry On.
It's just been, it's exceeded expectation. I've been so proud to be British, watching it from afar and watching it. And just being in England at the same time, the energy was fantastic. And we heard snippets of you on the television in the background. And I've heard glowing reports from everyone who went there. And just what was it like to actually commentate on it?
Well, first of all, Gavin is allowed back on the show because he complimented my commentary. Francis Whittington is off my Christmas card list.
Both of them were allowed back on the show because they were fantastic guests. So, first of all, and co-host, Gavin was a wonderful co-host. But carry on. You were a part of the Games. What was that like?
It's quite odd. I've done it at WEGs and Europeans as well, but I mean, I think I've nailed my colours to the mast about how I feel about the Olympics. And just when we were doing rehearsals, seeing what the overhead cameras were going to look like, the shot they were going to show at the beginning of each broadcast, coming across the river, through the Naval College, over the arena, on everyday bar cross country, you just went, wow. I mean, that is just iconic. To sit and watch those sports. I mean, the individual and the team show jumping medals having to come to jump-offs. Charlotte Dujardin having a final centre line that made you go, God, maybe she hasn't done it. It could have gone either way. The team dressage was a great competition. It would have taken an 87% from Adelinda in a special, which I don't think she's ever done, to take the gold away from Britain. But it went down to the last horse. Mark Todd, the last horse out on cross country. And, of course, the last fence dropping Sarah Algotsen Ostholt down to a silver. So glad that she got a medal, though, rather than dropping right out of it. But for me personally, I mean, cross country was my big day. It's what I live and breathe doing. And we just hit the ground running. We did our big opening with the French and the English announcers. And then Giles Rysland and I, Giles will be very well known in the United States as well, just got going for the day. And we had a great time. And it just seemed slightly out of body experience. I don't feel like I said throughout the course of the whole probably 6.5 hours. And I'd love to sort of go and talk to an Olympic athlete and go, is that what happens to you at the Olympics? Because this was my thing. This is the only way I'll ever be at an Olympics. I think I did it really well, but it just sort of something took control of me and off we went. And it was just an amazing experience to have done it. And just never struggling for a word. Just, it was all there. It all went out. And Giles and I had a great time riffing with each other. We were told to keep it light, to interact with each other, it shouldn't be really formal, and to try and inspire people and encourage them into our sport, which I think is something we're really bad at as a sport. And without talking down to the people who know it, to try and involve people, to try and explain what we're doing was good fun. But the greatest thing was just having 55,000 people, rather selfishly, in the palm of your hand. You could just get the cheers and get the applause and get them behind everyone in the crowd, because they wouldn't know Mark Todd. And next thing you go, back-to-back Olympic champion, 84, 88, you know, legend of the sport, Mark Todd. And suddenly you can hear the cheer rolling up the hill. It was just an amazing, amazing experience. I've got my name down now for the next Winter Olympics and Rio and wherever else they'll have me. It was just fantastic.
I freely admit that I cried many times, and lots of, you know, the riders themselves were crying, Charlotte and Laura in the dressage. Was it hard for you not to cry?
I'm a big roughy-tufty guy.
You're a big softy, big tubby-tufty. Go on.
God, BBC do a montage well. Watching some of the montage before the closing ceremony and stuff, I was nearly gone. a couple of times during the opening ceremony. I mean, to actually have been at the opening ceremony, I mean, God bless the FEI and the people who hadn't taken the FEI's tickets, that the entire commentary team at 5 o'clock that afternoon were told, would you like to go to the opening ceremony? Yes. But during the sport, I think I'm sort of so used to sport and winners and history being made, as it was with Mikkel Jung. I'm a little bit more on side with that, but actually, you know, probably when it came to the closing ceremony or when I came and watched something else and I got a bit teary after that, it was all that sort of having come through and having to be dealt with very briskly at the time so I could keep working, and then having to come back and consider it at a later time.
And I know that all the athletes and you as well, you were all celebrating afterwards in the Greenwich pub that's now been renamed the Gold and Saddle, which is nice. Have you got any funny stories you can share with us about that?
Well, after eventing, the Germans had been in there drinking during the week, and I think they did pop in after their medals. The British, of course, were whisked off by the BBC for many, many interviews, so they didn't get to play. New Zealand TV knew exactly how to play this. They took their studio to the pub because that's where the riders were. I ended up wearing Caroline Powell's medal at one stage. That on Eventing Nation, the caption competition of somebody eating Toddy's medal. That was me. I'm sorry to say.
Don't FBI feed you.
So, yeah, that was it was a good night, let's say.
Well, you get to enjoy it all over again. It's not over. You get to commentate on the Paralympics now. So that will there be anything that you'll have learned and that you'll do different, or you'll just get to enjoy it? Deja vu.
It is a little bit. One of the things about the Olympics that I think really frustrates people is when they come up against, you know, oh no, we can't do that, or talking to the likes of Alec Lahore, who was the eventing manager, and not quite getting why he can't fix something, because the Olympics, being much, much bigger than everything else, has a department for everything. So anyone coming to it for the first time is always a bit like, well, you're supposed to be in charge. Why can't you fix that? And from our own side, from sport presentation, we've been through all that now. And we'll go back into quite a different structure. It's going to be smaller, a little bit more intimate in the way we do things. There's not quite so much razzmatazz, but we're going to absolutely do our best for those Paralympians, because they are Olympians in their own right. And I was so proud to be involved in what they were doing at the World Equestrian Games a couple of years ago as well. So it'll be great to see some of those horses and riders again, and to cheer them on over the four grades.
Good. We talked about this briefly when you first started with the Eventing Radio Show. What was it like commentating on your brother when he went round?
Well, Giles actually asked, did we want to swap and did I want to commentate on him on Cross Country Day? And I said, no, we'll... You know, if he'd fallen my way, I'd have done it. He's fallen your way, you do it. And that was probably great because, as I say, the Olympics is a bigger thing for me than the Worlds or the Europeans. But I just love being in the commentary box. Well, I don't love it, but for the very reason that were anything to happen, there's nowhere else in the world where I would find out more quicker. I was doing my in-ear commentary, so radio commentary for him during the two rounds of show jumping. I was so proud that he got through to the second round, which, you know, there were only five nations did it. So Ireland absolutely deserved their fifth place, their best result at an Olympics. And, you know, the other two, Aoife and Joseph, jumped those double clears on the last day, which is a huge testament to Ian Fearon. But Mark, at the end of the day, going fifth for the team cross country, and, you know, over those two rounds of show jumping, he knew he had to just get home for the team. I think the team structure did a very good selection there, putting him out fifth, not knowing that Camilla and Michael would have their problems. But there was always a good chance of finishing with three scores. But to come through with three scores, trot them all up without worry the next morning, and jump those rounds in the first round that got Ireland team fifth, over some, you know, very well-funded squads, was a real achievement, and I'm, you know, very proud, obviously.
Rightfully so. Well, one person who didn't, you know, the US we've talked about, and they didn't have a great trip as a team, and Boyd especially, Boyd Martin. I spoke to him very disappointing games for him, and I caught up with him when he's back in the States, and we're going to hear from Bit of Britain and then we're going to catch up with Boyd.
Hi, Glenda Geek here, founder of the Horse Radio Network, and we would like to take this opportunity to thank Bit of Britain for continuing to be our title sponsor for the Eventing Radio Show and for being one of the biggest supporters of eventing over the last 3 decades. If you need eventing supplies, there is no better place to go than bitofbritain.com. John and the entire gang are there to help you with everything you need for a successful eventing season. With the exception of the horse, you're on your own for that. Please support the company that supports you, bitofbritain.com, and like them on Facebook. Just search for Bit of Britain.
They all arrived home, and obviously we've had Otis up at the vets for the last 2 days after getting home, and they've basically spent a couple of days trying to figure out what caused the lameness. He's a lot sounder now in America than obviously he was at the games, but he was still a little bit off when you trotted him up. So Kevin Keane locked him, and they've located that the pain's coming from the ankle area, and they did a number of x-rays and ultrasounds and nerve blocks, and they figured out that he has a small tear in his joint capsule of his ankle. And it's basically a small lesion on the capsule of the ankle, and he thinks that because of the terrain that we had to go through, and the fact that Otis is quite a hard jumper, and also the fact that I put bigger studs in his front feet, that he's twisted his leg on the course somewhere, and then soldiered on to finish the course, but as soon as he pulled up, obviously he was quite lame, and it's one of those real painful injuries that we couldn't make sound overnight with ice and a bit of light exercise and change of shoes and all that stuff. But Kevin's quite optimistic that he'll make a recovery and be back in the game at some point.
Oh, good. And is that something that you just rest, or do you treat it, or what do you do with that?
Yeah, I think Kevin's going to talk about we're treating him with a therapeutic ultrasound, and we may consider doing an IRAP therapy. But I mean, the biggest thing is that the horse gets a good long rest and doesn't go back to work until he's 110%, which is sort of my plan anyway, just because he's done 2 4-stars that look quite hard on him in a short period of time. So, and obviously I want to get a couple of big ones out of him. Well, the next focus would be Normandy, and do a 4-star or 2 next year. So,
well, he looked fantastic. He made us all so proud, boys.
yeah. Well, it's one of those things that was. The good thing for me is I feel like I gave 100%, and there's nothing I would have changed about my preparation. And, I really don't think I could have got another mark out of him in the dressage. And, I think he went as good as I could have gone in the cross country. And, he did get a little bit, I think I was going to make the time, Sam. Up until the last minute, and he did really hit the wall in the last minute. And initially I thought he might have run out of puff, but thinking back on it now, I think he really started to feel the pain running through his leg, and he pushed on and finished, and it was a couple of seconds over the time. But it's one of those terrible things that will haunt me for a while, and but it's one of the it's the nature of competitive sport, and it's just heartbreaking that it had to finish that way, because I think he's renowned for good show jumping, and I believe he would have put in a couple of good show jumping rounds that would have left him in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, I know that, and you said you're going to give him a good holiday, but you had no holiday at all. You came straight back and did Millbrook.
Yeah, well, Millbrook's one of my favourite events every year, and the bulk of my supporters and owners are from the Millbrook area. So I love getting up there and riding those horses up there. And, you know, I think I'm glad I went, actually, because I was obviously it was a pretty depressing finish to an Olympics, which, you know, would absolutely throw in everything at, you know, our life and a huge amount of income lost. And it was a great, and a lot of these people supported us, you know, and helped us along and helped get Michael Berrison over to coach me a couple of times. And, you know, and I really was glad I went up there, and I enjoyed jumping on my young horses and doing Millbrook, because it's a great event.
Well, you had lovely Trading Aces there, didn't you? He did really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think he's actually going better now than when I was riding him all the time. It's a little bit depressing. I got my best ever dressage score, and the first time I rode him on the flat was the day of the show. So hats off to Silver and Caitlin, who might have done me a bit of a favour.
What are your full plans with him and also with Remy and Neville?
Yeah, I think Neville, I'll either just cruise along till next year, or I'll probably set him up for Poe, one or the other. And he's just back in work now. And so I've got to make that decision with Kevin and Philip to see if we should try and do Poe on him, or just tick along and aiming for Kentucky and Burley next year, sort of thing. Remington will go hunting this year. Like, I've got to sit down with the owners, Ron and Dancy, because he's sort of, you know, he almost had the best event of his life there at Barbary, and he was in flying form with a great run at Kentucky. So we've got to sit down and regroup and work out what's best for Remington's future. And so, you know, I'm not sure what the plan is with him at the moment until we discuss that. But I know for sure I'll probably get the opportunity to hunt him a bit with Cheshire this year. So.
Oh, that'll be fun.
We may see him eventing again this year, I'm not sure.
Who do you hunt with up near you? What's that? What hunt?
It's the Cheshire Hounds. Cheshire.
It is the Cheshire.
Yeah, which is a pretty awesome group of horses and riders, because they've got, you know, all the famous racehorse trainers and jockeys out there, a lot of my owners actually hunt there as well. So it's great getting Remington out there and doing that a bit. So.
And Trading Aces, what will he do?
I think I'd like to take him to Fair Hill. I mean, I'm a huge believer that Fair Hill 3-star is the ultimate preparation event for a good Kentucky, because I think it's the biggest, boldest and toughest CCI 3-star in the world. And without question, if you can run around Kentucky, if you can run around Fair Hill, Kentucky is a walk in the park, you know, with 6 months more training underneath them. So I think that will suit him the best. You know, the big focus with him is obviously improving him a little bit in the dressage. And I think he ran well at Bromont, but, you know, we're still getting to know each other. And you know, part of the thing at Bromont was I probably didn't have him quite fit enough. I mean, he still ran second there, but I think to have him available and competitive for Kentucky next year, I'd like to put a bit more of a base on his fitness. And, you know, I'd start, you know, start thinking about gathering up a group of horses, which I think next year can start making preparations for being in contention for Normandy.
Yeah.
So, and they'd, you know, they'd be, you know, I think Neville will still be about, I think Trading Aces, Otis, and I think Crackerjack.
Who's Crackerjack?
He's a horse, a younger horse that won the two-star at New Jersey 3-day event. He won the CCI 2-star and finished on his dressage. He's a Colin Davidson's old horse. And,
right.
He's a very, very impressive horse, and he's about to have his first advance. But he'll, you know, he'll do a couple of 3-stars next year, and then a you know, that you're putting in the mix as well, maybe on the greener side of things. But, you know, I think in hindsight, you know, looking back on how everything pans out at these games and everything, you know, you've got to try and have a squadron of four or five horses that are, you know, 12 months out looking like they're going to tick all the boxes. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that makes it, you know, you got to have a good team of horses, because, you know, it's so hard getting qualified and selected and then keeping them all sound when you're trying to make the team. So that's sort of what's on the back of my mind at the moment. I mean, I'm glad I went to the Olympics, but there's definitely a real empty feeling. I think the Olympics was my 20th four-star, so, and I've been doing it since the year 2000. So it's, you know, initially it was just about finishing or completing, and now that goal's, you know, that's not the goal anymore. It's about trying to win him, you know.
Well, if you could have won it on support alone, you would have won the gold medal. I know that.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the heartbreaking thing is, yeah, you had a country behind you, and supporters.
Absolutely.
And owners and coaches and wives, and, you know,
so much.
And then when you come up short, it. That's, I think, part of the depression of looking around with all those people that got you there a bit, and all the people that helped you along, and, you know, and you almost wanted to do well for them a bit, you know, and that's sort of the painful thing, you know, for flying home empty, you know.
But I think everyone knows, you know, that's horses. Everyone knows that you gave 100% and couldn't have done
it
more.
Yeah.
And we'll, you know, continue to support you to the next one. And thank you so much, Boyd, for talking to us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much to Boyd for chatting to us, and thank you again to Bit of Britain. We've also got another exciting young rider that we're going to talk to. Comes from a family of eventers, from his mother, who's an international judge and has judged at pretty much, I think, every event there is. His sister also rides. Doug Payne and Holly Payne were both on the cross-country course at Rolex this spring at the same time. Doug, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me. And I hardly know where to start. You wear so many hats, but principally at the moment, you're an elite event rider. And let's talk about your top horse at the moment is Running Order. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show here. Running Order is a very, very special horse to me. It's a horse that I've had now for 4 years. He started off his career racing over in Ireland with a guy by the name of Enda Bolger, a very well-known trainer over there. And I had a brief stint here in the States doing some show jumping, but it really didn't suit him terribly well. So he made his way to our place about 4 years ago and started from bigger novice and went up. And he's moved along probably at a faster rate than many horses would, but he's a bit of a unique case because he had so much jumping experience with the racing that ultimately the lower levels weren't a whole lot of a challenge for him. So he's really progressed at a very good clip, and I mean, he's such a talented horse. He's only a 10-year-old at this point, so he's got loads of time left, and done his first four-star this spring, and he was third for Horse of the Year last year. So it's a very, very exciting one coming up.
And he's a stunning, great big black horse, and he couldn't really have found a better jockey to take him.
I don't know.
Well, because
I'm very lucky to have him. That's for sure. There's it's funny. Probably the first day or second day he was here. You know, I mean, you always want to play with the new tour, right? So we set up a little jump, and it was maybe only a foot high or so, a little Cavaletti, and cantered up to, and he must have jumped it as if it were 5 feet tall, and his knees were up by his eyeballs. And I was thinking to myself, well, this really is something special, because he when he came, he didn't have a whole lot of muscle, and he's kind of a, you know, he's a big lanky horse, so he wasn't exactly easy on the eyes on the first day, and he certainly impressed me from then, and you know, he's developed into a tremendously great horse.
Well, I explained already when I introduced you that you come from a sort of storied eventing family. Your mother is an international judge, and your sister and you were both going around Rolex on the cross-country course at the same time this year. But I didn't realize to what extent until I was reading up on you. You have so much experience and so much diversity. You're a judge yourself. You have, what level have you ridden up to dressage?
Yeah, so I've ridden probably four or five to I1, so intermediate R1 dressage. So, and I've had a horse now that's actually this spring is up in the Grand Prix show jumping as well. I mean, my main love is cross country, and it always has been. But I think doing the pure sports certainly has helped my riding in the eventing, and I mean, I really enjoy it. My sort of goal going forward is I'd love to compete at the top level of all three disciplines, but I'd really like to be able to show up at a show or an event or a dressage show or whatever it might be and not be tagged as an outsider. You know, you'd like to be able to perform well enough to you know, stand on your own in there. And so I just enjoy it, you know.
And these are all on horses that you've pretty much started from scratch yourself, too.
Yeah, nearly everyone, of the event horses we have here, basically everyone came and maybe the most experienced probably did Walk Trot Canter, but they've all started from scratch. And my sister and I were very lucky growing up where we did, with my mom being as involved as she was in eventing. We were exposed to a whole lot, but financially we didn't have a whole lot of support in that way. So we had a horse growing up, each of us, and when we graduated high school, anything we did beyond that was on our dime and still is today. So I think that was, you know, ultimately if you want to succeed and you want to do it, you've got to be diverse and put yourself in the way that you can sort of maximize all your skills and ultimately put out a better product so you can get more horses in, you know?
Well, it's a pretty exciting time now because you are making running order available to 10 people or actually a little bit more. Let's talk about this. You've joined forces with the Event Owners Task Force, and it's something called Experience Eventing, and you've made him available for syndication?
I have. So he's currently owned by Patty Springsteen, and she's decided to move on. And so I've contacted, actually, I was supposed to Mark Hart, who heads up the Event Owners Task Force, in one of his sort of projects along the way, and he's been a tremendous help. The task force has done a great job, and it's something that I think has been long needed in the sport, especially in this country, is that they've developed a legal framework and a template to form these syndicates, and they've done a whole lot of background research into how to make all of this work best for not only the riders and people who are selling the horses, but also people that are joining in on these syndicates, so that everyone is well represented and you know, ultimately looked after. So I think he's done an absolutely great job with that.
I know that I've spoken to Boyd, and we had Boyd on earlier, and all his syndicate owners are so happy, and Boyd's so happy, and they actually helped engineer Neville's syndicate and Otis's syndicate, and it just makes it very clear and very easy and very simple. And I know also that it's a tax help, which shouldn't be your motivation, but it's nice.
Yeah, it certainly can help. You know, and the beauty there is that it's made, you know, I mean, my expertise is not in law. So the nice thing is that they've got some, you know, attorneys that have helped structure this whole thing that basically, I think, ultimately people are much happier if they can go in knowing exactly what they're getting into. And as long as you're upfront and say, you know, lay it on the table and say, here's what it is and here's the expectations. And, you know, you're looking to have people that can enjoy the process from, you know, you're going to have good days and bad days. And, you know, I think that makes the whole process so much more exciting. You know, it's not necessarily looking after, you know, obviously it'd be great to get a medal in the Olympics, but I think if you enjoy the day-to-day process of training and refining your skills, you know, it's certainly on a rider's view of it, it's great to be able to share the experience with people. And this is, they've given the opportunity here in a very clear way to do just that.
And you've been so good at sharing already. I mean, I know I love your helmet cams. I love, you know, you're so good at Facebook. You do Twitter. What, as a syndicate member, what are you going to offer?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. The the stuff with the helmet cams has just been a lot of fun. My background is actually in mechanical engineering, and so I love the technical side of things, and I really enjoy doing all that stuff as well as the horses. So it's been a great way to share the experience of doing all this with everyone. And it started off actually as just a way to help owners that would not have the ability to go out onto cross country, help them sort of see what it's really all about. Started doing that, actually developed the system in 2005, and actually NBC picked it up. They sort of hired me to go to Kentucky, and Camera O'Connor wore the first camera basically in competition that went on to live TV, which is pretty exciting. But yeah, we basically set it up so that we can share the experience, and now with YouTube, it's a whole lot easier to get more and more people involved. But the syndicate owners would obviously have access to all of that. They're going to have monthly updates and periodic calls, and obviously after competition, get a sort of a recap of how things went and where we're tracking on this path to bigger and better things. And along with that, when they come to the shows, it ends up being a great group of friends that is able to show up at all these great venues and enjoy the time together and also watching their horse go. And it's funny, there's only so much you can tell your friends how great your horse is, but owners never seem to get tired of that. So it just makes it a lot more fun, really.
And I know that you were so kind. You and Sharon White did a wonderful course walk for me. Well, not for me, for Just World International to raise funds for them at Rolex this year. And we had a ton of people join us for that. And you were incredibly
popular. Yeah, it was a massive turnout. I've got to give Sharon credit. We had a wave of orange following us. We were certainly not discreet walking around the course.
But you were incredibly popular, and you were both really funny, really interesting, and really entertaining. And you had them eating out of your hand because it was, as many people as we had, they were listening intently, and we were able to hear everything. And I was fascinated by it all, as were they. And it was great. So I'm sure that I'm sure your syndicate owners will enjoy course walks with you and things like that. And
oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we had a great group that time, but I think I've got a the sort of dream job here. There's always ups and downs to it, but ultimately I get to ride these horses around the most exciting competitions in the world, and just to sort of share that with people is a whole lot of fun. Ultimately we're just riding horses here, and it's great to have a good time with it. So as low stress as it can be, I think that's really the best way to go forward.
And where does Running Order go next?
Well, he's going to head out to Richland in 2 weeks and Richland Park and do the CIC 3-star there. Probably head down to the AECs, and the goal this fall is to get to Fair Hill. We had, after Kentucky, an opportunity. Your gut instinct's like, well, we should go to Burley in the fall. But I think he's kind of a spooky horse, and he's a really unique character. I mean, he's a total attention whore. I mean, he loves attention, and but he'd be one also that's going to spook at a rock as you go by, or a standard or a flag or whatever it might be. So I think it was a great advantage this summer and fall actually to stay home and actually get a few more runs under his belt where he'll be a bit more confident, and I think it'll set him up for next year even better. And of course it's a whole lot cheaper to stay at home than it is to head all the way over to England. I'm really looking forward to it.
And then will you go back to Rolex in the spring next year?
Yeah, so we should do tentatively, and obviously knock on wood, we could do Kentucky in the spring, and then probably do Burley next fall, and he should be really in great shape for a shot at Normandy the year after for the World Games.
So I saw on your bio that you never had any intention of being a professional event rider. You think?
Yeah, no, never did. Never did. I went to school for mechanical engineering and grew up. My mom's business, I give her a whole lot of credit because I couldn't do what she does. She does a whole lot of judging and a whole lot of lessons and rides, a handful of horses per day. And I probably wouldn't have the patience for it, unfortunately. So I never actually envisioned that you could structure it in a way in which I could be riding for a living, and I'm very lucky to sort of figure out a way to make that happen. I ride probably 10 to 15 a day, and teach a handful throughout the week and do a bunch of clinics and that sort of thing. But it's been a great process, and it's just been a whole lot of fun. And I thought when graduating high school, graduating college, I was going to go into forensics and do accident reconstructions. And I had the opportunity to rot, and I was thinking, you know, I probably should give this a shot now because I'll regret not trying later on in life. And I'm glad I made that decision.
So no chance that you'll be joining the New Jersey State Police after all? Thank you.
No, I don't think so. Not any longer. There's actually a couple sort of cool side projects that are on the horizon here, sort of more tech-related, that could potentially make a big impact on the sport. So those are all sort of under wraps at the moment, but by the end of the year or early next year, we should be able to unveil it. So
that
could be a whole lot of fun. Yeah. No, it's,
can you give us any clues?
It has loads of potential. Little hint. Basically, in the way of sort of integrating technology into training so that we can hopefully start to accelerate the rate at which people can learn. And I think it has a lot of potential. Still a little bit in the prototype stage, but I think we're heading in the right direction with it.
Well, that's exciting. And we're always excited to see more Helmet Cam videos with your commentaries on. I love them. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we will. Oh, no worries at all. It's great fun. And we'll probably have the camera out and ready for Richmond because that is a fabulous event. And they have a great cross country course there. Very interesting and neat to have places like that where you get a little bit of woods and a little bit out in the fields, you know, open and galloping, and great complexes and very, very well built courses. So. Also, lots and lots of fun.
Great. Well, it's always fun to talk to you. Thank you very much, Doug, and good luck with the syndicate, and we'll speak soon.
Yeah, no, perfect. Well, thanks again. And like I said, if anybody has any questions whatsoever, just shoot an email or go to the website, and I can do my best to answer them.
So great to hear from both Boyd and Doug there at very different points in their path towards those next Olympic Games at Rio. Interestingly, for you guys in North America, the stadium they're going to be using in 4 years' time is the National Equestrian Center that was originally built for the 2007 Pan Am Games. So there'll be some people with match practice going out there from those 2007 Pan Ams. But, both Boyd, you know, did his job in London and supported the team going into the last day, as of course you'd expect. And then very quickly back to America, as a lot of them were, or as we saw William Fox Pitt was back out competing almost the next day. And Doug, a real, real talent. I saw him live in the flesh at Red Hills in the spring, and he's an impressive young man from a good family.
Very exciting for America's future. Also very exciting for America's future. We'll have a new coach soon. David O'Connor will start at Buccalo, will be his first international competition as the US coach. So that will be very interesting.
And well, Samantha, in a way, actually, I meant to tell you this earlier, but that so Tuesday night, the night after the show jumping, David, with the greatest respect to the Canadians, and I'm sure he spent time with them, but David was in the Greenwich Tavern with the American panel. There were a lot of guys over. Michael Pollard was over as well, Pan Am gold medalist. And David had started the process with the Americans, you know, right from the get-go, because he knew they needed picking up straight away. And I'm sure the Canadians were very understanding about his need as a guy from the USEF to go and do that. So, that kind of bodes well for the future as well.
It does. Well, it's a small world. Eventing is a tight-knit community, especially over here in the States. And Lainey Ashker was over here giving a clinic in Kentucky this weekend, so I took the opportunity to chat to her. And Lainey has long been a fan of the off-the-track thoroughbred. Her mother finds a lot for her, and she's found several for Doug as well as Becky Holder, who's just, I think, recently bought one from Lainey's mother in the Comet line, from Courageous Comet. Philip Dutton's also bought from her mother, and Hawley Bennett as well. And an interesting tidbit about Lainey, talking about the Rio Pan Am Games, but Lainey competed the very last long format three-day event at Rolex, and also at the very first ever short format event at Blenheim, and also at the Hong Kong Test event at Sha Tin. Lainey, welcome to the Eventing Radio Show. We're here doing a clinic, and first of all, incredibly impressed by the difference you're making to all the riders.
Thank you.
And B, it's so intense what you do. Are you this intense with your riders at home that you teach on a regular basis?
I am. The clinic situation is there's pros and cons to it. Obviously, I don't know any of these people, so you don't want to completely rock their world in one lesson because you're never going to build Rome in a day. But it's also an outsider's point of view. I can kind of see someone go around and size them up in 5 minutes. And for me, because I don't see them on a regular occurrence, I can change things pretty radically. And so that's, you know, there's a pros and cons to teaching a clinic. But yeah, I'm pretty intense. I ride with Kim Severson in the flat. And she's intense with me every time I see her. And so I feel like you guys are going to get that bang for your buck, you know, and I want everybody to leave challenged, but having accomplished a lot. And whether it means I have to get on the horses to demonstrate it or to finish them up, then I'm totally happy to do that.
And I've watched you, and you're pretty, you're like their best friend, you're like their cheerleader, you're giving them sort of constant encouragement. Do you come in with a set sort of idea of some exercises that you want to give them, or do you just wait and see and size them up on the spur of the moment?
I kind of wait and see, you know, depending on what the horse and rider need to work on. There's some that the horses need to be more in front of the leg. There's some that the horse needs more relaxation. And a lot of the exercises that I give kind of overlap depending on what they need. But at the same time, I don't say, okay, everybody's going to work on this today, you know. And when they come in, they tell me their level. Some horses maybe do schooling prelim, and I can school advanced level movements with them. Some maybe schooling prelim, and we need to kind of bring it back a level to work on the basics. So it really depends on the individual horse and rider.
And of course, Kim is renowned for being fantastic on the flat, and I also know that you do a lot of pure dressage too. What would be your basic philosophy if you had to sort of sum up in a minute or so, what would be the one things that you would come away with?
You know, with Kim, I've learned, don't be afraid to push yourself. Don't be afraid to shake your horse up a little bit, because the only way you can advance and get better is by kind of tossing the cards up a little bit and almost asking a little too much. You can always scale back. But my problem before was I had all horses off the track, you know, thoroughbreds off the track, and I was scared to make them nervous. So it would take so long to progress forward. And it's one thing where you start with the basics and you get those down, but then there's a point where you can start asking more and challenge them a little bit. You can always go back and get that relaxation again, but and kind of demand that perfection. And before, I always kind of settled with the mediocrity because they were relaxed, but I never really understood that you have to ride a horse into relaxation as opposed to coaxing them into relaxation.
That's really interesting. Thank you very much, Lainey. Yeah,
thank you.
Well, thank you to Lainey, and I'm sure she has a big future in the US eventing team. My Twitter of the week this week, John, is Claire Balding, who was equally brilliant to you, but especially she's always brilliant, but especially during these Olympic Games, she was fantastic. And she now goes on to head Channel 4 Racing, and she'll also be at the Paralympics with you, heading them up for Channel 4, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, she was our talisman. When she turned up, Britain won golds, and when she wasn't there, she wasn't for the eventing. We didn't. Not to say, and I meant to say it earlier, Britain's silver is a fantastic achievement, but the annoyance was that Germany had always just left the door open. They were never 50 penalties clear, like they'd been at Le Moulin. So it was just always just there to be grabbed. We'll get Claire along, and Britain will do the deed.
And my horse of the week is actually not a horse. It's our guest this week. It's Doug Payne, not just because he's awesome all around, but especially for his helmet cam videos with his commentary, for his willingness to embrace new technology, and just because for everything, he's got it all. He's got talent, brains, looks, and sadly for everyone, for all the ladies who are Googling him avidly now, he also has a girlfriend, and she's equally awesome. She's Canadian international event rider Jessica Hampf. You can find Doug via a myriad of ways, but he's also on Twitter at DP Equestrian, and we'll put links to his website on our website.
My Twitter of the week, Sam, is the absolutely astounding Claire Lomas, who you may recall about 5 years to the day since having a spinal injury that rendered her unable to walk, walked the London Marathon in a spacesuit. She's got a new challenge on, but with the Paralympics coming up, I think Claire Lomas is somebody that people should definitely follow on Twitter. She comes to all the major events as well, so you always get her side of that as well. She's at Claire80Lomas, and she's Claire with an I, Claire, 80Lomas, L-O-M-A-S.
She is. And, sorry, carry on.
Go on.
Well, she is. She's the most extraordinary, fantastic person that you could... I mean, she is. She's one of those very special people. And I'm very excited to say that she'll be a guest on next week's show. And we'll also be looking ahead to Burley and the AECs. But I'm very excited to talk to Claire next week.
My of the week is going to be people. It's difficult to know whether those of you who watched on television got an appreciation for our volunteers at the Olympics, the games makers. I don't know where they found so many British people who were smiley and friendly, but they did. They found about 70,000 of them. But particularly at Greenwich Park for the equestrianism, the games makers, the volunteers. I mean, I had a good friend who was a volunteer horse ambulance driver for the 2 weeks. They did a superb job. They need massive props. So many of them coming back to the Paralympics. And so many of them were sort of telling me, and not with ire in their voices, about how much it had personally cost them financially to be involved in the Olympics. I mean, I feel enormously privileged to be paid to just sit and chat about the Olympics, whereas these people who are actually making it work are doing it more than for nothing. That it's costing them significantly. And as well as the volunteers, at the last minute, a significant number of young men and women from the armed forces, soldiers, sailors and airmen, were drafted in to help man the security points as well. And I have to say, probably the greatest decision ever made. Terrible for those guys recently back from Afghanistan and losing their post-operational tour leave. But they had a degree of common sense and a friendliness and efficiency that I just don't think we would have gotten from private security contractors. So to the volunteers and the young men and women from the armed forces who literally did make the Olympics work and work so well and will be doing it again for the Paralympics in a couple of weeks' time. They are my of the week, of the month, probably of the year, of the Olympiad, the four-year cycle.
Hear, hear. Thank you, John. Well, thank you also to our guests this week, to Boyd Martin, to Doug Payne and to Lainey Ashker. Please visit our homepage for links to their various websites and social media. We are going to introduce a new segment. I should mention this now. If you have any questions that you'd like to put to our panel of experts, please leave a voicemail on our voicemail number. That's a US number, 270-803-0025. Or you can leave it on a Facebook search for Eventing Radio, or you can leave it via email, samantha@horseradionetwork.com or john@horseradionetwork.com. And we'll read it out online. If you have a specific expert that you'd like us to ask, just mention that, or we'll just pick one or two experts and we will put it on next week's show. You can subscribe to the Eventing Radio Show via iTunes to make sure you don't miss a single episode. Please check out our Facebook page too and just look for the Eventing Radio Show. You can follow me on Twitter at Samantha L. Clark, and you can also follow Horse Radio at Horse Radio, and you can follow John at
John Kyle Speaks.
You haven't changed it to Olympic John or Olympic Talker?
No.
But you have a great avatar. I like your picture now.
Well, I've gone from being Wenlock now to the show jumping Finnish. and there are more pictures to come before I go back to being normal.
You can support our sponsors, find all the links on our homepage. Have a safe week, keep in touch, and enjoy your eventing.